Welcome to Holistic Matters, the podcast that's designed to help you become the you that nature intended.
Today we're back with Dr. Kerry Bone. We last had a great discussion with Dr. Bone about 9 months ago at the Nutrition Innovation Center. And today we're going to talk about some new applications in both digestive health and also in cardiovascular health. So I think all of our listeners are quite familiar with Dr. Bone. He's the author of several books, including The Ultimate Herbal Compendium, a desktop guide for herbal prescribers, and probably the ultimate textbook that's used in naturopathic colleges and colleges around the world called The Principles and Practice of Phytotherapy, a Modern Herbal Medicine. Kerry, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, John. It's a pleasure to join you.
When we last spoke about 9 months ago, we had a general discussion on the important role of herbal and medicinal botanicals. And so today I wanted to try to focus on one in particular, berberine. It's been popularly used around the world for at least two indications, cardiovascular benefits as well as digestive health. In the United States, a lot more berberine is used for cardiovascular support, and the digestive health is a great extended opportunity. But differentiate for our listeners, you know, when and why and how to use berberine for either one of those discussions, then we can do a deeper dive into each one.
Certainly. Firstly, let's say my preference is to use berberine that is in a herbal matrix, and we can choose a number of herbal sources for berberine, but my preference is the Chinese herb phalaenodendron, and that has been made into extracts which enrich the berberine, but still do it from a natural plant matrix. So, as you mentioned, with berberine, we have two key uses: the cardiovascular and the gut uses. And the gut uses stem from its antimicrobial activities. So if we go first to the cardiovascular uses, these stem from a rather interesting and uncommon property of berberine, which is its capacity to stimulate a factor known as AMPK. And now, AMPK is a central energy switch for the cell. It's a cellular sensor, and so it changes in response to the energy metabolism and demands in the cell, and as such reflects effects in the whole body. When AMPK is stimulated, it switches the cellular metabolism from an ATP-consuming anabolic pathway to an ATP-producing catabolic pathway. So you start, in a sense, burning up or consuming that excess energy. And it helps with metabolic balance and therefore has applications in three key common issues: metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. And a lot of its impact on cardiovascular disease obviously stems from its capacity to help with metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes. And essentially, it is a multifactorial phytochemical that can favorably influence blood glucose control and blood lipid control at the same time. And there's actually no drug that does that. One of the interesting things also about berberine is that by targeting AMPK, it has a strong analogy with the drug metformin. Mm-hmm. And metformin is being used as now, or being proposed as, an anti-aging medication. Well, if you're looking at taking an anti-aging strategy, and it's all via this AMPK targeting, if you're looking at that, why not use a natural plant source rather than a synthetic drug?
Right. So AMPK is really part of the kinase inhibition, which is studied quite a bit. But this is a nice natural way to to regulate AMPK response, or the entire system, actually, isn't it?
Yes, it's a really good way. And you might be thinking, well, how does it impact on longevity? How does it impact on cardiovascular risk? A lot of it is because of the impact of stimulating AMPK on mitochondrial number and function. So you're getting right down to the health of a very key cellular organelle, which is the mitochondria. You also stimulate mitochondrial turnover, because mitochondria can get very damaged by oxidative processes. And you also inhibit factor that gets upregulated by modern lifestyle, and that's called mTORC1. So you're seeing a range of favorable effects, and that can lead, and by other AMPK mechanisms, to lowering of triglycerides, lowering of LDL cholesterol, and better control of blood glucose. And for these applications, there is actually very high level evidence. So we have from especially Chinese studies, a meta-analysis from multiple clinical trials that lowers blood glucose, and meta-analysis from, again, many clinical trials that it also lowers LDL cholesterol.
So I think many of our practitioners and listeners are probably familiar with other phytoactives like resveratrol. Would it be fair to try to compare berberine to resveratrol and its impact on AMPK and all the other conditions you just described?
Yeah, well, interestingly, resveratrol also, among other things, targets AMPK. But the key aspect of resveratrol is the fact that it targets sirtuin 1, another really important cellular target, which is involved a lot in repair and regeneration, as well as promoting the longevity of the whole organism. So, yes, they have, if you like, I think a synergistic interaction with each other. If I'm, for example, targeting an anti-aging strategy, I would use the two together. Now, one of the interesting things about berberine and the AMPK effects is that it needs to be absorbed, obviously, and get to cells to do that. And berberine is quite poorly absorbed. And one reason is only about 99%, put it another way, 99% passes through the gut, not absorbed. Only about 1% or less is absorbed. So one way we can improve the absorption of berberine is because it's being pumped out by this cellular pump at the gut wall, and the cellular pump is called P-glycoprotein. So if we have some natural inhibitors of P-glycoprotein, we can help our berberine absorption. And the herbal complex from the milk thistle called silymarin is exactly that. It's a TGP inhibitor, and so you can get synergy between using silymarin in conjunction with philodendron as a source of berberine, get more berberine in the bloodstream, get these AMPK effects and hence the metabolic effects on blood glucose, healthy cholesterol levels, and longevity, for example.
That's fantastic. So, you talk a little bit about the mitochondrial energetics and the role of berberine in really cellular energetics. One of the things that we've noticed over time is that individuals who are hyperinflamed and just have an underlying elevated inflammation, their energetic shifts. So it actually becomes more anaerobic than aerobic. But berberine, from what you're describing, could be really an important benefit in supporting this trying to control underlying inflammation.
Well, I think so, indirectly in this context. But again, we find, we mentioned the synergy between berberine and resveratrol. We also find a synergy with another key phytochemical, which is curcumin. In these chronic inflammatory conditions, berberine, curcumin, I think, have a wonderful synergy, especially when the cardiovascular risk is on the table.
Right. Interesting. How about if we shift to another use of berberine, which is really digestive function, and one of the reported benefits overall is using berberine to help manage digestive disorders ranging from microflora imbalances to really improve gut function. But tell us a little bit about the specific benefits and uses in digestive health. for berberine.
Absolutely. Yes, yes, absolutely. So as I mentioned, 99% of the berberine is not absorbed. And even if we use something like milk thistle, that's going to change a little bit, but you're still going to get well over 90% not absorbed. So it's traveling through the digestive tract. Now, berberine is a wonderful broad spectrum antimicrobial. It's active against fungi, it's active against bacteria, and it's active against, for example, single-celled protozoa. So it can help to, if you like, just clean out those pathogenic organisms in a broad way that doesn't necessarily cause any flora imbalance. And then if we're doing the right things like providing good fiber and prebiotics to stimulate the healthy flora, that can build a completely different profile of gut flora that the person needs. In other words, a healthy profile. So it's like a weed and feed strategy. So I certainly use berberine from phalaenodendron as part of my weed and feed strategy, and it's a very important part of it. But it also has applications, you know, where you have specific gut pathogens present. And we actually have clinical trial evidence for that. For example, it's been used in Giardia. It's been used as part of a strategy for Helicobacter and conditions related to dysbiosis like ulcerative colitis and diarrhea predominant irritable bowel syndrome. It's been shown in clinical trials to be beneficial as well. But I think the really big application of berberine is in SIBO.
Such a problematic issue, but it looks like berberine could be quite helpful.
Indeed, indeed. So, again, I'll probably use it in conjunction with other strategies against those that small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So, for example, some essential oils like anise and oregano oil. And I will often use the phalaenodendron extract on its own in conjunction with some essential oils, you know, to really heighten that impact. But you've got to do, in a sense, the weeding or killing in SIBO for a longer period of time than if you were just using the berberine to adjust gut flora. So generally, I might weed for 10 days or 2 weeks and then feed for, who knows, 7-10 days to get the healthy bacteria going. But you're not wanting to feed too much in SIBO until you get those microorganisms down.
Would you use berberine in conjunction with a probiotic or even a prebiotic, or just a standalone therapeutic target?
You can do all of those things. You can use it in conjunction. You can use it standalone. Obviously, if you're using a probiotic, you don't use it at the same time as the berberine because it does have antimicrobial activity. So you don't want to use them at the same time. And when I say the same time, I mean the same time of day. You can, for example, take the phalaenodendron extract in the morning and the probiotic in the evening, for example.
Okay. So if we could describe, you know, the ideal patient profile that practitioners would see and right away think about potential use for berberine, would it be digestive disorders, SIBO, bacterial overgrowth, antimicrobials, and then secondarily, a major category would be cardiovascular benefit, particularly healthy lipid management?
And healthy blood glucose management and insulin resistance, yeah. So there's two distinct categories, and sometimes they do occur together, which makes, you know, berberine ideal. But, yes, there are two distinct categories. One is the gut bacterial issues or even gut organism issues, because, as I mentioned, it's a broad-based antimicrobial. And there's even suggestion that you know, SIBO is also SIFO, in that the S stands for fungal overgrowth as well. Uh-huh. So if you're just using an antibiotic, you're not going to affect the fungi. But if you're using berberine, you will. It has that as a key advantage. But one of the things I like to address, and you do see people talk about it, this is especially if you're using berberine for the cardiovascular insulin resistance application, the person has to take them long term. When you're using berberine for gut health, you're generally pulsing it. It might be a week, 2 weeks, or even shorter, depending on your goal, but you're not giving it all the time. But for these cardiovascular and insulin resistance applications, you're giving it all the time. And for that, some people have raised concerns. Is it going to cause over time an imbalance in the gut flora? The evidence, the published evidence, suggests this is not the case. And this goes from in vitro studies to animal models and also a human clinical trial. So if we look at the in vitro testing, that's shown that your beneficial bacteria, like your bifidobacteria, are much more resistant to the antimicrobial effects of berberine than pathogenic bacteria like E. coli, for example. So there's less likelihood of imbalance because of that. And they backed that up with an animal study where they found when they fed them berberine, it actually improved healthy bowel flora and short-chain fatty acid producers. And then there was also a clinical trial in people with type 2 diabetes who received berberine for 8 weeks. And when they, again, analyzed their fecal samples, they found increases in bifidobacteria. So, and correlation with anti-inflammatory effects because of the reduction of potential pathogenic bacteria that might be driving inflammation. So the published evidence does not reflect those concerns. But on the other hand, there are a few caveats about the use of berberine and indeed phalodendron as a source of berberine. The first is pregnancy. I certainly don't recommend its use during pregnancy. But the second is if the patient gets an adverse gastrointestinal reaction when they're given this phytochemical, then certainly you don't proceed. If it's too distressing, you don't proceed. And that is possibly, to me, an indicator that that particular person, the berberine is causing some adverse effects on their gut flora. So what I'm suggesting is if berberine is going to imbalance gut flora, and I would stress that the published data is that it doesn't, but if it is going to do it, the patient will essentially tell you by the symptoms that they have when they take it, and then you need to switch out of that and go to another option.
You know, you had mentioned a couple of other herbs early in our discussion, including curcumin. Practitioners are constantly looking for great combinations or even single therapeutic regimen to use. Can you provide any insight or guidance on how to make it easier to better understand and select, say, just berberine or just curcumin or combinations of any herbs?
Oh, well, that's quite a difficult one to answer as a short answer. But I think essentially what I do is I'm guided by the objectives. So with the patient, from what they tell me and in discussion with them, we set out some objectives. And it's by way of emphasis. So there's a considerable overlap between those three key phytochemicals, resveratrol, berberine and curcumin. And indeed, if you were doing, say, just a general health longevity program, you would do all of them. If you're just taking the berberine for health, you wouldn't necessarily take it all the time, but the other two you would take all the time. Then if you're looking at cardiovascular risk, again, I would tend to do all of them. Blood sugar issues, metabolic, I would tend to do all of them. So to me, I think they're core, and probably what you would do would be around those three core phytonutrients, if you like. For example, if it's cardiovascular risk, you might, do something more for their vasculature or their blood pressure, say, for example, with the herb hawthorn. If it's insulin resistance, you might think of herbs like nigella and cinnamon, black cumin and cinnamon for those applications for insulin resistance. And if it's more inflammatory, then you might use the emphasize the curcumin, for example, and combine that with other anti-inflammatory herbs like Boswellia, and of course omega-3s because of the resolvin effects. So it will vary according to the patient, but I would see these three as almost core in a lot of the challenges that we see with the modern patient.
Okay, that's great. You know, you mentioned nigella or black cumin. It's also been a well-known spice for a long time, for centuries, right? Called black caraway. But it has a growing interest in use, particularly in underlying inflammation. Can you tell us a little bit about black cumin and its targeted preferred use?
Yeah. So its botanical name is Nigella sativa, and it's probably the most highly rated herb in the Middle East. So we know it here as black cumin seed or black cumin oil. And a lot of people I know are taking the oil of the black cumin, but that to me is the analogy is like whole flax versus flax oil. It's a pressed fatty oil. And to me, you're limiting the phytochemical range when you're just using the pressed oil. So to me, it has more sort of food applications, not necessarily as therapeutic. So I use the whole black seed and its extract, or the whole black cumin and its extract. And in traditional Middle Eastern legend, it was described as the cure for every disease except death. That's a rather phenomenal recommendation. But I think it testifies to it having a very broad-based activity. Now, its traditional uses, for example, the great physician Avicenna, he rated this plant very highly, and he referred to it as the seed that stimulates the body's energy and helps recovery from fatigue and dispiritedness. So if we look at these traditional uses, you can immediately see a very important application in the modern context, because people are stressed out and tired, and they often have low mood as part of that or separately to that. And here in the 12th century or whenever it was being attributed with these properties by someone as great as Avicenna. It's quite interesting because I was at a conference once and I met some Middle Eastern physicians, and they were saying that still is their core use of the black cumin seed, and they're using it, so for example, in chronic fatigue syndrome. And I certainly use it that way. You know, when I make up a tonic mixture, I will put the black cumin seed in that mix together with other herbs like rhodiola and ginseng and schisandra and, you know, range of others. Ashwagandha, of course. The interesting thing is that the modern randomized controlled trials actually supporting the uses of the black cumin beyond this, and in a sense backing up as the cure for all diseases except death, because it's just because of the diversity and the amazing flexibility of this herb. So it, to me, it's now a key herb for allergies. And all of these things I'll be talking about are from clinical trials. Key herb for asthma, hay fever, other allergies, hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's disease, can help with thyroid function. And as we already discussed, abnormal blood glucose and lipids and correcting body weight and hypertension. So you put all those together and you have the modern syndrome of metabolic syndrome, which affects 30% of all adults in the United States. It's also been used adjunctively in Helicobacter pylori infection to help repair respiratory damage, for chemotherapy side effects. And again, back some of its traditional uses, it's been shown to boost memory and mood and help with anxiety. So it's an extraordinary range. And there's been this flurry of clinical trials from the Middle East for the black cumin seed, and they keep coming out at a wonderful rate. So we'll be learning more and more about its clinical versatility.
Yeah, that's great. That's exciting. You know, Kerry, this black cumin will be you know, a new option in therapeutic care for many, many of our listeners and practitioners. How would you help them better understand its specific uses? Like if they were used to another herbal therapy that they sure. might consider trying this, or if you could help us clarify and better understand patient segments and targets for black cumin, it would make it easier for them to adapt.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is now my number one herb in allergy. So mm-hmm. I have a patient comes in, they have asthma that's based around, and asthma is not always based around allergy, but the classical asthma that begins in childhood is. So it's my number one herb for allergy. And I certainly will use other herbs like Michael Skullcap and Albizia, but I make sure that they're getting the black cumin if they have allergy. And that's because of a quite strong clinical data from several trials of its use in hay fever and asthma. So that's the first thing. The second thing is herbs that boost thyroid function, that credibly can boost thyroid function. You know, for example, in subclinical hypothyroidism or early stages of Hashimoto's, herbs that do that are very thin on the ground. Now, we've had recent insights from clinical trials that ashwagandha will do that. We have the traditional use of the seaweeds, especially the bladderwrack. But just recently, there's been this clinical trial of nigella in patients with Hashimoto's disease that showed some wonderful benefits and certainly boosted especially T3, which is very important to do that. So I consider that an exciting new use. And then the other really important use, but here I use it in formulation in conjunction with things like cinnamon and fenugreek, is its use in metabolic syndrome and lipid control and healthy blood pressure, healthy body waste. So it has been shown to impact these things in a small way when it comes to body weight and waist measurements, but nonetheless, the evidence is there that the effect is positive. And as that's combined with other aspects, you know, lifestyle medicine and so on, then you're moving everything in the right direction.
You know, what said that you described about use in Hashimoto's and thyroid is pretty exciting, right? There aren't that many possible solutions, herbal remedies. And if you can address, say, thyroid dysfunction, now you have a chance to influence and balance better energetics and issues that lead to problems with metabolic syndrome and on and on.
Yes.
I mean, is that kind of like the core real benefit that you'd recommend people looking at first and then build out?
Absolutely. But also the allergy in your side. I think that's quite important. And the other thing that I mentioned right at the beginning is I still go with this traditional use. I consider it as a valuable tonic herb. So chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and especially when you find that, for example, and many patients do have that with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, and in fact, it's kind of considered a diagnostic indicator in some circles, they have allergies. And if they then also got perhaps some hallmarks of metabolic syndrome, it's kind of like the ideal herb in those circumstances.
Great. Any specific examples or patient case studies with black cumin that might be helpful for practitioners as they get used to when and how and for whom they should use black cumin?
Well, as I said, I have quite a few people who have allergies and I've been prescribing black cumin for them. And they do, and in conjunction with other herbs, and they do notice considerable benefits. Also, as I mentioned, I'm prescribing it in combination with patients with metabolic syndrome and even type 2 diabetes. And just yesterday, I had a patient who's HbA1c, and she's type 2 diabetic. It had deteriorated to, I think it was around 8.8%, which is not good. So I gave her that combination of the black cumin with you know, the cinnamon and the other herbs I mentioned, and she came back after, I think about it was 3 months, because HbA1c is a 3-monthly test. And she came back after taking that as an addition, and she was at 7.8%. So just from that addition alone, we got a full, unit, which is a percentage drop in HbA1c, which is tantamount to about a 15 to 20% reduction. And I typically do see that. And often I'll use the black cumin in conjunction with the phthalodendron as a source of berberine and see quite good effects, impacts on blood lipids, for example. So, look, I know the topic of cholesterol is controversial. Do we need to lower someone's cholesterol or not? Is it really helpful? But I think the issue of statins for cholesterol and do we need to lower cholesterol to good targets, they often get conflated. So some people, when they talk about the evils of lowering cholesterol, are really perhaps expressing concerns about statins more than that. So my personal view is that there is an optimal range for cholesterol, and we can use safe, gentle treatments together with lifestyle modification to target those optimal cholesterol levels. And a combination of the black cumin with the berberine from phthalodendron, I find it very clinically useful. As you can see, LDL reductions of up to 25% in some patients. Responses are variable.
Well, this has been another exciting and insightful discussion. Thanks so much for sharing your insights with our practitioners today and the advances that you continue to help us work with our patients in both berberine and black cumin. So, Dr. Caribone, thanks very much for your time, great insights, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. And I think you're back in the United States in February or so. A couple of seminars in the West Coast?
September.
September. Sooner than I thought. It's even better. So we'll encourage everybody to come and listen to you then. So we look forward to seeing you at those events. And again, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And certainly, yes, I look forward to seeing your listeners at my seminars.
This podcast features the song New Day by Lee Rosevier, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you liked this podcast, please share with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you next time on Holistic Matters, where we are talking about how to be the you nature intended.